Museums around the world are returning artifacts to their countries of origin. One in London has sent back its entire collection of Benin bronzes to Nigeria's government. It's one example of a trend of historic items being returned from across Europe, the Middle East, and the Americas. So how can other countries ensure that their cultural treasures are given back and can go on display for generations to come? This is Inside Story. Hello, I'm Adrian Finnegan. Welcome to the programme. London's Horniman Museum has returned its collection of Benin bronzes to Nigeria. They were stolen in the late 1800s by British colonial troops after they invaded the Kingdom of Benin in what is now Nigeria. The artefacts ended up in museums in Europe and the United States, and African states have sought their return for decades. But the museum is still keeping hold of hundreds of the statues. Al Jazeera's Harry Fawcett starts us off with this report.
A major moment in a long campaign. In 1897, British soldiers stole thousands of finely wrought artefacts like this from the then Kingdom of Benin in modern-day Nigeria. Now, London's Horniman Museum is returning these six pieces and signing over the ownership of the 66 other so-called Benin bronzes in its collection.
To enable these objects to be displayed in museums, for people to see and people from outside the country to come and see in the context of where they have been looted is a significant moment for us.
For now, there are six deliberate gaps in the museum's display cases. More will follow, with plans for a significant number of artefacts to remain on an extended loan from the Nigerian government.
Had the resurgence of the Black Lives Matter movement in 2020, leading to sort of more concerns about how we accounted for the provenance of objects. So it was a kind of natural outgrowth into a tipping point.
It's here, though, at the British Museum in London, where the largest single collection of items taken from Benin in the 19th century remains, more than 900 individual objects. The museum says it wants to ensure that collection is shared as widely as possible. It isn't, though, talking about returning them.
One major stumbling block is written into British law, a 1963 Act of Parliament forbidding the museum from disposing of its exhibits, with just a few clearly defined exceptions. In a statement, the museum emphasised its collaborative work in Nigeria, saying, "We actively engage with partners through the Benin Dialogue Group and the Digital Benin Initiative, while research and cultural exchange initiatives are also key priorities." But in recent years, other institutions in Scotland, France, Germany and elsewhere have been returning items from their Benin bronze collections. Over the years, the debate has taken in concerns over security and conservation in Nigeria, but increasingly it's become one about justice and restoration. Nigeria's cultural custodians say it's time for British institutions and British politicians to right a historical wrong. Harry Fawcett, Al Jazeera, London.
Well, as Harry said there, ancient artefacts scattered across collections around the world are slowly being returned to their original homes. In January, five Roman artefacts stolen from the ancient city of Palmyra in Syria were handed back. They've been kept on display in a private museum in Lebanon since 2018. Egypt also has a long list of stolen historical items that it wants back. But that list is long and the whereabouts of many pieces unknown. The golden coffin of priest Nejaman was returned to the sands of Cairo, but that was only after it was spotted in a celebrity photo shoot organised by New York's Metropolitan Museum of Art. And in February, a 700-kilogram Moai stone statue arrived back on Easter Island in the Pacific. It had been housed in a museum in Chile's capital since the 19th century. Let's bring in our guest then for today's discussion. From London, we're joined by Barnaby Phillips. He's the author of the book Loot, Britain and the Benin Bronzes, and a former Al Jazeera correspondent. From Utrecht in the Netherlands, Jos van Burden, a senior researcher of colonial collections and restitution at Amsterdam's Free University. And from Uppsala in Sweden, Luigi Prada, an assistant professor of Egyptology at Uppsala University. Good to have you with us, gentlemen. Barnaby, let's start with you. The Benin bronzes have become emblematic of this whole debate about cultural antiquities and where they belong. It's put some major Western museums in a difficult position, hasn't it, regardless of their intentions?
Yes, I think you're alluding, Adrian, to the British Museum, which has the largest collection of Benin bronzes of all, almost 1,000, and of course, which has a unique symbolic importance in this discussion, but indeed in so many other discussions to do with restitution and provenance, because it is the national museum of the country which was responsible for looting these items. I think events have moved very, very quickly. And as you say, they've left the British Museum badly isolated. Just 3 or 4 years ago, the British Museum was working together with other Western museums, and they'd reached a sort of compromise deal with their counterparts in Nigeria, which the British Museum was quite happy with, whereby they're all going to lend back parts of their Benin bronze collection in rotation. Well, things have moved on incredibly quickly, and suddenly any major Western museum which is not offering to give back its Benin bronzes, it's finding itself very much under the spotlight.
Jos van Beurden in Utrecht. With so many Western institutions now accepting that returning cultural antiquities, or at least the property titles of objects, is the right thing to do, why are there some people who vehemently oppose it still? Do their arguments have any merit?
Well, they have had a merit for a long time, but things are changing, and especially the sphere is changing, the atmosphere. And I even would argue that art dealers and private collectors and some museums, they hide a little bit from the discussion as they are scared, you know, because the mood at the moment is very much pro-restitution. Of course, one of their arguments has always been the ability of heritage institutions in Africa, you know, to preserve these objects. But this, you know, slowly is disappearing. I remember that, say, in the Dutch and the European media in the 90s and 2010s and so, in this ability to preserve dominated the news, and now it's much more the right of these people who have been dispossessed to get their treasures back.
Luigi Prada in Uppsala, where does Egypt's government stand on the issue of restitution? As we were saying, so many precious ancient Egyptian artefacts have been looted over the years, and the problem is that nobody really knows where many of them are right now. Where does the Egyptian government stand in terms of, or even start in terms of, getting them back?
Well, there's been a lot of discussion about the restitution, to begin with, of some very high-profile monuments or artefacts. I mean, we mentioned the British Museum, so of course the Rosetta Stone is high up on the list, comparable to the Parthenon marbles when it comes to relationships between the British Museum and Greece. But beyond that, I think that the topic is a particularly hot one for Egypt and Western museum institutions, also because of how much, how many illegal antiquities have left the country over the last decade or so. At the time of the Arab Spring, with the political upheaval, of course, there was a perfect time for antiquity looters and sort of like less than ethical dealers to illegally export antiquities from the country. So indeed, the government of Egypt has filed requests for restitutions. And it is indeed a complicated issue. I mean, it's something we tend to think of museums as some sort of like cages where ancient objects are, you know, put on display, but basically they just get covered in dust. But museums are cultural institutions. And so museums change as our culture and our societies change. So the topic of restitution is very much a valid topic. And I think what really matters is that we should really not think of it as a zero-sum game. There is this tendency of imagining that if the British Museum is to return this high-profile item, then it's lost for the British public or international tourists coming to London. But it's not that. As we heard, there's also suggestions of collaborations between countries and museum institutions, long-term loans. So we really should think of it not as a zero-sum game, like somebody's gain is somebody's loss, because it's not that. We're talking about world heritage, after all.
Barnaby, there are challenges, though, aren't there, for a country like Nigeria here? Perhaps you could outline some of those challenges for us. I mean, there are opportunities, too, but is there a danger that Nigeria could squander those opportunities?
It's a risk, yes. It is a moment of incredible opportunity, but also jeopardy. But going back into the past and untangling what happened is inevitably complicated. When the British invaded the Kingdom of Benin in 1897, Nigeria didn't exist. Nigeria was a British creation that came into existence some 17 years later, and it wasn't something necessarily that people who lived within its territories had ever envisaged. So we've seen that play out, for example, in the case of the Benin Bronzes. There are different interests within Nigeria, all of whom are acutely interested in the return of the Bronzes. There is a federal government with a headquarters in Abuja, which talks about building a national museum. Well, it's talked about doing it for decades, but there's no sign of it existing. There is a state government, Edo State, which is very involved in this issue. And then, of course, there is the Oba, the king of Benin, who is the great-great-grandson of the man who was toppled by the British in 1897 and from whose palaces the treasures were looted. So somebody who has an undoubted moral authority in this case. But I think, in broad terms, I think Luigi had it absolutely right. We shouldn't see it as a zero-sum game. It is, I believe, firmly in the case of the Benin Bronzes and indeed many other treasures, there is a real win-win situation. There's no reason why terrible wrongs of the past shouldn't be addressed, that people in countries like Nigeria or Ghana or Cameroon shouldn't be able to reconnect with their wonderful heritage, that it should be returned to them. That seems only right. But that many of these treasures are world treasures and they should continue to circulate around the great cities of our world, Britain, New York, Paris, Beijing, Delhi, Sydney, and so on.
Jos, do you want to pick up on that for me? And going back to something that you were saying a few moments ago, for many years, those who've resisted the calls have made the tenuous argument that the artefacts wouldn't receive proper care if returned to places like Nigeria and other countries from where they were stolen. I mean, that argument, as far as you're concerned, is no longer valid.
Well, the point is that, you know, the Africans would say, now finally the Europeans are admitting that they have robbed these objects. And now the robbers, they want to make to define the conditions under which these objects will be given back. And if you talk with Africans, and that has also occurred in the Benin Dialogue Group, this issue of the ability to preserve, to go correct with it, you know, has been discussed widely. And it's only because there's a certain atmosphere of trust has been created. And so the Africans admit themselves that there is a problem in this respect, but we should leave it to them to solve it.
Luigi, perhaps you can clear something up for me for a minute. I just want to, and if you can't, we'll put it to Jos and Barnaby. Can you explain the legal differences between the terms restitution, which we've mentioned a lot so far on the programme, return, and where the term good conscience comes into it?
Well, the word good, I can definitely tell you about the word good conscience. I mean, it's also like trying to differentiate between restitution, like legal issues, and also ethical issues. So, for example, the restitution of illegally smuggled antiquities. You mentioned at the start, earlier on in the program, the coffin of Nedja Manc at the Metropolitan Museum. I can tell you for a fact, within my professional environment, when it comes to museum curators and academics, nobody would ever act in bad faith. But there are serious problems with the antiquities market. The documents of the coffin had been completely made up and falsified. Hence, once the truth came to the surface, the coffin was straight away returned to the government of Egypt and its legitimate owners. But the problem here goes beyond the idea of legal repatriation and where the legal rights stand. It's also about ethical. It's also about reparation of historical wrongs. The legal entities that in the past perhaps signed contract and handed over antiquities to European powers, those legal entities no longer exist. Thinking about, again, the British Museum, and in this case, the Parthenon marbles. Well, at the time, Greece was part of the Ottoman Empire, so the official authorities in the end answered to the powers in Istanbul. The same, in fact, also in the 19th century for Egypt. It was a province of the Ottoman Empire. So that's really actually the problem that I think is more difficult to define. Again, where I think that nobody would disagree when it comes to repatriating illegal antiquities. The problem is the ethical issues. And so again, where do we decide, how far do we decide to go when trying to fix the wrongs of history?
Luigi, I just want to ask you, take a little sidetrack here for a moment. There are cases where valuable artefacts have been moved in order to preserve and to protect them in times of conflict, especially in recent times in the Middle East. Tell us your experience of that and how it differs from the case of the Benin bronzes and other stolen artefacts. I'm thinking in particular about places like Palmyra and how, in times of conflict, you protect sites of archaeological significance.
That is a major issue. I mean, yes, Palmyra is a good case. But first of all, in that case, much of it was architectural monuments. So how do you move or protect those? And also, like, the idea that moving antiquities somewhere else keeps them safe, especially to some other countries. Well, it's highly arbitrary. Many people will actually object and say that a lot of antiquities, including Egyptian antiquities, were lost during World War II in Europe. Plenty of Egyptian collection I can mention in Germany, Leipzig, but also Berlin. Plenty of fantastic antiquities. We only have photographs of them because they were destroyed during the bombings of World War II. So in that case, those things would have been much safer had they stayed back in Egypt or in other countries in Asia, as opposed to being in Europe. So once again, where do you trace this line? It's highly arbitrary. And there's also the risk of, once again, repeating patronizing attitudes of the past.
Yes, not all artifacts in Western museums were stolen or taken by force. How does that complicate the discussion that we're having here?
Well, it complicates particularly the provenance research. If you allow me to give an example, the Belgian federal government, they have developed a law which says that objects that are proven to have been stolen from Congo, for instance, become automatically the property of the Democratic Republic of Congo. So this property title is transferred. Now, they have investigated this, especially for the major Africa Museum in Tervuren near Brussels. And they have about 80,000 objects from Congo. And they have calculated that of these 80,000, 883 are proven to have been stolen. Now, that means, and they argue that 45,000, they have been collected in a correct way, and 35,000, they do not know, they still have to investigate. Now, this is a big, big problem, because there is very little documentation about these objects, so probably we will never know precisely whether this is booty or not, or whether this was confiscated or you know, acquired in a disputable manner. So how do we handle that? And in my view, you know, the discussion in Europe is currently very much focused on war booty and our feelings of shame, of guilt, maybe, about how we appropriated them. And maybe it should be much more oriented towards the needs of the countries of origin for collections that they need. And if I may give an example, I know that the Indonesia, the former Dutch colony, has a restitution committee, and they work now along this line. And they just say, what do we need to have a representative collection of our own cultural and historical past?
Barnaby, we heard in Harry's report earlier on about this 1963 law, which prevents the British Museum returning some, not all, but some, of the artefacts in its possession. To what extent is the British government in particular passing the buck? The Department for Digital Culture, Media and Sport in the UK has said decisions relating to the care and management of their collections are a matter for the trustees of each museum. Should there be more government intervention here, a driven policy here to guide how museums act?
I think the British government is being a bit disingenuous there. Yes, so, I mean, just to fill people in, the British Museum Act prevents the British Museum from permanently returning or deaccessioning, as museum people say, objects in its collection, with a few exceptions for which the law has changed in recent years. Objects stolen during the Holocaust and human body parts, human remains. Well, of course, if the law can change for those exceptions, why can't it change for, say, objects looted during the colonial period, people ask. But the point is that British Museum directors and trustees in the past have hidden behind this law. It's been a convenient excuse for inactivity. Nowadays, I'm not quite so sure that is the case. In fact, I see the British Museum as a rather divided place, and some curators within it are distinctly uncomfortable about the situation they're in, but they are unable to permanently return the Benin bronzes, or for that matter, the Parthenon marbles, until the law changes. And that would require a vote in Parliament. And if you look at the current configuration of the British Parliament with the Conservative majority, that seems extremely unlikely to happen short of a general election and a new political configuration. So it is a national political issue, which genuinely does leave museums like the British Museum, but also other museums, the V&A, the National Gallery, hamstrung on this issue, undoubtedly.
I want to spend the last few minutes of the programme talking about the future. Luigi, you were talking earlier on about how the world can continue to enjoy and learn from these objects. Should we now expect, you think, to see ancient antiquities presented in digital form rather than in person? I mean, you talked about collections being loaned out. To what extent does that water down their impact? And if we're seeing them in bits, if you like, and not a full connection because it's been loaned out, does that detract from the educational value of visiting a museum?
Well, there's no doubt that this is the direction where we're aiming in the future. There will be more and more museum experiences, more than just walking through items. There will be more also replicas because of how now we are able to create perfect quality replicas. But this also doesn't concern just artifacts and objects in museum collections. This also concerns monuments. I mean, if we think about some of the earliest prehistoric art examples in the caves of Lascaux in France, nobody can actually visit the original because just human presence there would mean the decay and permanent damage to the original pigments. So everybody visits a replica. We have similar situations in Egypt for some decorated tombs that are too fragile. So yes, indeed, that's the direction. And I don't think that it detracts to the educational value of the experience. Actually, in a way, it can add to it because of the multimedia approach that we can use. If nothing else, I do appreciate that it might detract from that emotional connection that one might have with what is original and ancient object. So there are still things that we need to fix. This is also part of the conversation that we still need to have. We haven't sorted it all out yet, indeed.
Okay, Jos, we have about a minute left on the program. What will the museum of the future look like?
Well, I'm not sure whether it should have digital objects, because for digital objects, to link up with what Luigi says, is that the objects we should distinguish between, on the one hand, ceremonial religious objects, and on the other, maybe household utensils. Now, for the latter, digital repatriation can be a solution. But for the first, I know from most countries of origin, they want the originals to come back. And then if they allow it, we can have made digital copies for in our museums. But I think in the museum of the future, it should not be about objects, first of all. It should not be about stories, first of all. It should be about the relationship between former colonized and former colonizers. And this relationship, in the relationship, you discuss, for instance, can we show ancestral remains? Can we show mummies? Can we show these sensitive pictures, photographs, etc.? So it's a matter of dialogue for the museum of the future.
And that, I think, is a great place to leave it. Many thanks indeed, gentlemen, for being with us. Barnaby Phillips in London, Jos van Beurden in Utrecht, and Luigi Prada in Uppsala. As always, thank you for watching. Don't forget you can see the programme again anytime by visiting our website at aljazeera.com. For further discussion, join us at our Facebook page. That's at facebook.com/AJInsideStory. And you can join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle at AJInsideStory. From me, Adrian Finnegan, and the team here in Doha, thanks for watching. We'll see you again. Bye.